Best and most blessed greetings of divine peace, grace, goodness, and divine light, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to Soul of Islam Radio. My name is Ihsan. I am a faith-based life coach with the goal of supporting seekers upon the path and finding a healthy balance between the spiritual and practical dimensions of life in our modern world. And my platform seeks to serve as a bridge between the worlds of matter and spirit, faith and the lack of it, the practical and the religious, the temporal and the eternal, the old and the new, and the mind, body, and the heart. I recorded the following interview with Sheikh Fadlullah Hayri last year, but unfortunately did not have a chance to edit and publish, and am doing so now as our conversation contained valuable insights and information regarding faith, spirituality, and development. Sheikh Fadlullah has been humbly teaching and sharing spiritual knowledge for decades, and though based in South Africa, is well known throughout the world. He is the author of several dozen books and focuses extensively on communicating universal spiritual truths through the timeless tradition of divine revelation as it has reached us through the prophets and messengers of God. I had the opportunity to speak with Sheikh Fadlullah, and what resulted was an illuminating conversation that covered topics of the spiritual crisis of the modern world, the root causes of current cultural malaise, facing uncertainty and stress, identification with spirit rather than ego, death as a doorway to truth, the middle way, spiritual asceticism, the importance of your environment, attachment to permanence over the transitory, and much more. I pray you enjoy and benefit.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, beloved Soul of Islam Radio listeners, and a warm and generous welcome to you, Sheikh Fadlullah Hayri. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you with us as one of the elders within our community, as someone who has tremendous experience on the spiritual path and a lifetime of experience. We're very grateful for you making this time to have this moment with us. Thank you, Sheikh Fadla, and welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sidi, we find ourselves at a very unusual time in human history in which there seems to be quite an acceleration in terms of the pressure that's put on human beings to what we might call to awaken or to evolve, to grow, to develop, Sidi. And what would you say about this unique point in human history that we find ourselves in?
Your assessment is correct. I think the stress and the demands at every level on human beings is increasing. And if you just look at the last 400 or 500 years, you can see that suffering, conflicts, difficulty at a personal level, within one's own self, family level, community, society, national, the whole world is intensifying. And I think all of it is because we are in a really deep spiritual crisis, because the nature of life itself is spiritual. What is this amazing miracle of life and time, the flow of time, anything that exists within this two-dimensionality of our world, duality of the world, this conditioned consciousness is all the time between beginnings and ends. So we are living in a state of total insecurity. Whilst education, ease of outer life, the last few hundred years, increase the demand for stability, reliability, security, and all of the other things. The nature of the field of energy in which we are is insecure. We are at best hanging on air. You breathe in, you breathe out, you don't know, you sleep, you wake up. We are caught within intense levels of dualities, and yet there is a drive within us for unity. I want something that never ever changes. I want something that's ever, ever reliable, ever constant. And of course, religions, which have on the last 5,000 or 6,000 years, brought in more and more the idea of an all-dominating, all-controlling, sovereign God, Allah, all of that makes it even more stressful, because then here I am told that there is a major power that controls the seen and the unseen and the most minute and the, as well as the cosmic events. And he created human beings, created them to be known, to know him, to know that reality, to know the absolute, and to be loyal and honest. And here we are, barely able to maintain reasonable order within our own minds. What about the heart? What about the spirit? What about the ruh within me, which is the cause of my life? So intense, intense, and more diverse are the challenges. And suffering also as such is far, far more. The more we have improved, so to speak, on the basics of our health sciences, the more you find now there are within it a great deal of anxieties and depressions and things that we can't do. And even our attempts to try and reduce these sufferings and anxieties are more and more under question now. They are at best palliative. They don't help to cure. It's essentially a spiritual issue, because in essence, I'm here because of a spirit in me, or a ruh, or a soul. But what is that nature? What am I supposed to do so that I am flowing along the line of nature of the spirit in timelessness? Not all within space and time, and space and time, and cause and effect. And so this is the issue. What you said is absolutely correct, and I think it will intensify. And I think it's part of the rahmah. Not everything else is part of the rahmah anyway. But this is clear that we have not been flowing with it. So there are more, if you like, constrictions and uncertainties as life moves on, as it had been over the last few thousand years, especially. Life began a few billions of years ago, and we can only talk about the last 50,000, 200,000, whatever it is. It's just basic, just a blip in the event. But now it's mature. Now it is at a stage where we have to be extra cautious. That's the story.
You mentioned that there's almost an inherent level of uncertainty and the resultant stress and anxiety just in existence. For example, the fact that we are alive truly by grace from moment to moment, from breath to breath. And so there has always been some level of stress, I suppose, in human existence, in human life. But it seems to be reaching almost, as you said, crisis levels now. Many years ago, I went for a short visit to Afghanistan, where my family's originally from. And I expected to find a lot of, you know, because of the wars and because of all of the trauma that's been experienced, I expected to find a much higher level of, let's say, experienced stress. But I was quite surprised to find that people generally were far more resilient and at peace, in fact, even in very difficult circumstances. And so that was a bit of an awakening for me, Sheikh Fadlullah, in terms of the role of faith in spirituality and the quality of a human being's experience. Do you see the crisis that we are experiencing at this point as something that is now pushing human beings to, again, face who they truly are themselves, and also to start to look towards the truth and spirit? And how would you define spirit as the role or as the root of the human being?
What you experienced in Afghanistan is part of our human heritage. There are communities there. And as you know, there are still quite a lot of communal strife and difficulties. But it is based on extended tribes who are also having cohesion based on trust and faith and also practices of the deen. So that is why it is as you have described. It's very appealing. It has its own stability. It hasn't got all of the high level of anxieties that we now have in modern times. But what has been happening in the last few thousand years, the last 10, 15,000 years, is the move from personality and the biography of who is your priest, who is your prophet, who is your leader? Give me the details of him. How did he live? How did he become the spiritually awakened prophet that he is, or whatever? It is moving from that personal identity to patterns of reality. It's losing that cozy, wonderful person to person and the tribal leadership, and based on honesty, on trust, on who is better in their ibadah and in their worship and in their fine tuning, if you like, to the spirit of life itself. Moving from that to show me the patterns that are within patterns that govern everything, from the minute, you know, the cells within my body, the all the electronic movement within my brain, and on and on, so that I avoid that which is going to cause me too much disturbance or too much uncertainty, or does not help me to combine change and stability together, because that's where we are. We are in a zone where the two opposites are ever together. Certain and uncertain, breathing in, breathing out, awake and sleep, alive and dying, and on and on. So it is moved from what was cozy, pleasant, and so on, and it had a tremendous appeal even to us now. It's not reversible, not changeable. That's why there is a lot of nostalgia. Most of it is romantic, but the beautiful past. Look at the beautiful old Baghdad. Well, they were throwing people in the river left, right, and center, and the rulers were often most crude and cruel, and so on and so on. But now look how nice. And look at the Mahmal, look at the... We're nostalgic. We're people looking for home, and we are forever homeless. Where is home? Please take me home. I'd like to find a home where they love and they think and they feel. It's all in the mind. It's all selective memory, you see, because all what we have, in fact, are means to cope with the ever-changing environment, so that the soul or the spirit, which is the key thing in me, remains in a reasonable habitat. So at best, are you, he, whoever it is, we are hosts and hostesses of a mysterious entity called soul or spirit. It is something from beyond our mind to comprehend. It is a source of life, and it is directly connected to eternity, perpetuity, and boundlessness. And that's why we yearn for that. Nothing ever is enough. Not enough, more. Not enough. Not. And what about it being eternal? So that is why a human being can never be content. And that's why the only thing that prevails is whatever we want ultimately, Allahu Akbar. It's greater. What you are seeking, what you are looking for, what you are, is greater. You can never attain it. It has attained you and me. It is within you and I. And that's what it is. Once you accept that, which is really the foundation of Islam, accept it, embrace it, be at one with it, you find it's ever true. The rest are peripheral. The rest of our activities is for us to test this unique opportunity of doership. I can do things. I can change things. Very dangerous, because it's not reversible. Most of the time it's not. So I have to be cautious. Am I doing this along the flow of nature and evolution and rise in intelligence? What am I doing because of my whims? You see, that's why it is most dangerous. We have come after a few hundred years of human whimsicalities, Why not this one? No, they were not behaving. We're going on war. Now organize this, organize the army, this, the weaponry. We show them, we give them a lesson. Who learned what? Look at us now. Billions and billions and considerable portion of people's effort, taxation, all of that has gone on warfare. And what has it? What is it doing? Unless I stop the warfare within me, within the mind and the heart, within the so-called I, ego, nafs, and the light of the ruh or spirit within me, until the nafs gives in completely to the spirit, I'm at war. When, why not this? He has more. He didn't share it properly. And doubt, suspicion. It's the nature of that beast, of the uncouth lower self. And it will continue. It's not abating at all. So that's why people have to take on to medication, more escapes, more holidays, more fancy holidays, more this, more that. It's ludicrous. It's actually madness. But we got used to it so much that we don't see the lunacy of it. Everywhere you look, our work, our homes, our what we eat, and the waste. So you can only take respite by seeing it and being horrified, and then in a way smile at the stupidity, knowing that Allah is in charge. A time where a situation will come that much of this edifice will have to collapse. When, how, we don't know. Nor can I sit aside and wait for it. No. What am I doing for it? In my personal capacity, how can you reduce, if you like, waste and distraction? And these are the questions we need to apply. And it's getting more and more and more until something happens or many things together happen that people realize that the biggest asset they had was life, and much of it has been wasted by frivolous distractions. So it's a very grim picture, but the other side of it is the light of life itself, the gift of that divine, ultimate gift of gifts, treasure of treasures without measure. So it is his business, Allah's business. It's Allah's theater. And at best, we are occasionally given a little role as an actor. Before you know, also, it's taken away. So we have to be alert. Now you can do something, do it properly. So that you know the intention was to calibrate with the highest rather than your own feeling or your own like and dislike. Sometimes they are useful, sometimes they're not. You have to have a calibrating point, reference point, the divine light itself. What about a million years from now? Is what you did also acceptable? Put it in context, put it in perspective. Otherwise, you regret it. And nobody wants to suffer with regrets and guilt. That's the issue. It's already done. The patterns are already set. It's up to us to follow those patterns. And they are superimposed upon each other. And that can only come if the mind is clear, the heart is pure. So the light of the ruh within the heart shines and the mind catches it up and says, no, this is not my domain, I can't do anything. Keep quiet. They are quarreling, it has to continue, and then it subsides by itself. The fire is raging. You can't just bring a bucket of water on it. Wait, hold your bucket until it begins to... The timing is cycle within cycle within cycle. How do you read it? Iqra. How do you read it? You know, our limitation for reading or knowing is so minute. So you have to allow the higher sight, the insight, the divine light in you to shine upon you. So, you know, nothing we can do now. Just wait a bit. I would like to do it, but I can't. Because everything is against it. Your wind, your weather, your timing, the national, whatever disaster, you have to read it. Not easy, because we are in a rush. And that's beautiful. We got in a rush to know the ever-present of the divine. We are hurtling along. So it is إِنَّكَ كَادِحٌ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ كَدْحَىٰ. It's correct. Every one of us in desperate rush. For what? To be certain that Allah is in charge. To be certain that everything that's happening, including my suffering, is according to a pattern. That I was not looking there, so I fell into the ditch. That's it.
So you mentioned, Sheikh Fadlullah, that on the one hand, we have the opportunity to come into or choose to seek alignment with the will of the divine, with the will of spirit, the will of life. And on the other hand, we can choose not to. And it seems like so much of modern life is an escape from that, from the option, from the way of, maybe one way to say it would be the path of God, the path of faith, the path of spirituality, the path of awakening. So much of it seems to be in the opposite direction and almost an attempt to escape from that. And in a sense, perhaps to escape from our true selves, even though it seems to be a path of the self. Somebody listening to this and saying, yes, now I am finding my life. I'm not satisfied. I have a lot of questions. I don't know how to find peace. What would you say is the path? How would you describe them? What would you suggest for perhaps as the means to begin that spiritual journey towards awakening and towards peace, towards knowledge, towards alignment and harmony?
We're given the faculties for it, but they are subtle and they need to be exercised. Honesty, which is at numerous levels, to be honest, to be honest, to be honest. We're all the time looking for personal benefits, which is understandable. That's all what I know, my person. So how can I benefit more? So until I realize that the ultimate purpose of my rushing for benefit is to be content, is to be secure, is to be present, is to be in the moment, is not to have anxiety about the next moment or tomorrow. So once I learn that my desire for accumulating wealth, power, reputation, whatever, is as an indicator that the future will be all right, if not better. But in truth, my ruh has no future. It's ever present. Its future is already within, by it, in it. Once I know that I'm a ruh, then my reading of the map of so-called reality of the world I am in will change. Once I truly know that the real me is a divine bundle of light, which cannot be comprehended by my feeble mind, and that ultimately the so-called I, the shadow of this ruh, at best is a host or a hostess for this ruh to have an earthly journey. Otherwise, it's like a flame in a fireplace. It will leave. It will die. It will not continue. So my death, of course, is the beginning for the real me, because that by my death, I'm no longer the so-called choice of will that you mentioned. Choice is always trouble. It is ignorance. Once I know what is appropriate for that moment, then there's no choice. It's a relief. I can't do other than what I did at that moment. That's how it was. You know, the fire was raging, the wind was this was it, and I was slipping on the floor of the. I had no choice other than what I did. That means I was present. I was completely focused on maintaining life, on being reasonably, you know, to being alive. That's our obsession, to be alive. So you do whatever you can in order to safeguard that. Because my life is forever. Life is forever. And my life is not separate from that beam that we call ever-living life. So once we begin to see it, you see it, and then there is really nothing more than being present in the moment. No anxieties about what happened before, what may happen later. You're present. And that is, in a way, touching eternity. The moment is eternal. On and on and on and on. And that's what we love. We're constantly concerned about connection, connection, connection. Continuity, continuity, continuity. And none of these two happen unless there is consciousness. Conscious, conscious. It began with just some awareness in the tiny little whatever it was a few billion years ago. Now it's not just consciousness, consciousness of consciousness of consciousness. So stay there, stay put. Only do if you think, if you are sure, if you're content that you have been given that role. Otherwise, there will be a lot of regrets, and most of it not reversible. So why do? We have grown in the last 100, 200 years. Do more, multitask. Why? And look at everybody's, they have accumulation of all kinds of things and no contentment. They're not present. If you tell them you only have one day to live, they'll immediately go into depression. Why? It's the most natural thing that you're going to leave your body and mind behind. Death is the most natural thing, as is birth. But talk to people and then say, you know, I really think you're a fortunate person. You may not live more than two more days. And see how popular you will be. It's ludicrous. We're truly ludicrous. So it's all assumption, presumption, and illusion and delusion. And that's what we say, why isn't the world working? What do you mean the world? We're not working. We are undoing. So, تُخْسِرُ الْمِيزَانِ the Quran. Quran has about 7 or 8 ayahs on that issue. You know, وَلَا تُفْسِدُ فِي الْأَرْضِ بَعْدِ إِصْلَاحِهَا. After these billions of years, the earth had become stable. The ice ages are over. This is, so do not damage it as we are doing. Now, suddenly we quoted the idea of, you know, environmental damage, this damage, ecological. They're choking in the poisons of what we have done. ظَهَرَ الْفَسَادُ فِي الْبَرِّ وَالْبَحْرِ بِمَا كَسِبَتْ أَيْدِنَا. We are doing it. And look at Allah's rahmah and mercy. لِنُذِيقَهُمْ بَعْضَ الَّذِي عَمِلُوا. So as they taste some of what they are doing, thank God it's not a few kilos of plastic every day. It's ludicrous. We're really ludicrous. We call ourselves rational, very reasonable, and scientific. What is this? It is almost at the point of serious catastrophe. And it can change. It's in Allah's hand. Anything can change instantly. But what are we doing? Because this experience on earth is participative destiny. We have to play a bit of a role. You know, we are allowed to do that in our destiny. And if we muck it up, then as the Quran also tells us, to be taken away through all kinds of things. No longer, once a critical mass of events take place, nothing we can do. Or I die, whatever it is. It's the most wonderful, amazing perfection, within perfection, above perfection. If only we see it with the eye of insight, not just rational, mental, and outer.
Allah Almighty, subhanahu wa ta'ala, describes in the Quran the maqam of the awliya, and specifically, he defines that or quantifies that as they who are free from fear and from grief. And you mentioned the importance of presence, the present moment. So fear is something that has to do with the future. Grief is typically something that has to do with the past. So in a sense, it's almost as if Allah Almighty is describing the state of the wali as one who is present here and now in the present moment. Sheikh Fadlullah, what would you suggest as perhaps a means to connecting with that present moment and with eternity, rather than the typical consumption that we have with past, future, and the material world? What is a practical thing that a human being on the path can perhaps take advantage of?
The Quran tells us, Ummatan wasata wa khalaqnakum. We are middle people between the earthly evolution, development over billions of years, the animal with a mind, with greed and with fear and anxiety. I am a human being with all the anxieties of a human being. What if, what about the illness can lead to? I am a human being with a divine spirit and light that gives it life. That's the middle. A middle people is that, heavenly, earthly. So my first beginning, even physiologically, biologically, is earthly. The baby is born. Its concern is to be fed, is to have comfort, ease, on and on and on and on. So I cannot deny the outer need and the need for me to give attention. So you mentioned about they have no fear and they have no sorrow. They have taken care of issues that brings about fear in the now. It's not just the future. Make sure that the house is reasonably secure. There is some barrier against the animals or against whatever. We have to do whatever we can to have reasonable, stable abode so that we can rest. Otherwise, you're all the time anxious. What if the roof falls? What if this comes? What if the wolves come in? So we need to use our reason, the mind, which is the intermediate stage between the ruh, which is heavenly, and my earthly nature, which is my humanity. So I have to do a certain amount to secure reasonable, feel like comfort, ease, security, up to a point, no more. Then the rest I trust. لَا خَوْفٌ عَلَيْهِ وَلَا هُمْ يَحْزَنُونَ. They've done their best. They know their needs are minimum. There is no excesses. There is nothing. And the rest they can trust. How can I trust in the unseen if I haven't taken care of the seen that has been given to me to take care of? This is the participative nature of destiny. I have to do my bit. اعمل وتوكل. Do your best and then have tawakkul. Then it is correct. I, as a human being, asked, investigated, took counsel, and I've done what I can. It didn't work. Fine. Allah wants to show me that whatever I plan has its limitation. Fine. Don't be upset about it. That's the nature of the human sight and vision, and that's all. It's limited. But I did what I could. I even asked, and didn't work out. Often it does. If you investigate, if you are not too anxious, if you are not too fearful, then often it will work out. So your life will be an easy, wonderful flow without a great deal of major, disasters. But you have to be open with sight and insight until you find Allah is in charge. And sometimes Allah will take it away from you. You thought you were doing this, nothing happened. Again, Allah is in charge. So if you can say that Allah made me forget it, it's wonderful. If you can say Allah made me remember, wonderful. It means Allah is the doer. But we have been given this little portion of interfering. It can be along that path of destiny. It can be against it. It can be muddled in between. We are here to learn that. To learn by personal will and desire to flow along the pattern of the divine. Pattern within pattern within pattern. Cause and effects in multiple complicated type of trees. That's how it is. And I have to admit my ignorance. I have to admit my need to be vigilant, diligent, and ultimately talk. And I'm willing to change it all. I thought going to that town, the war was raging. Nobody knew from where, how. I thought that town is safer. And I heard about it. But before we got there, it had changed. Some new parameters came and the whole thing changed. A new volcano came and engulfed the whole thing. You have to be flexible. You have to say, it's changed. I have changed. I wanted so much A, B, C. I don't want it now. I've realized there are burdens. I don't want it. Thank you. I just need to have comfort, ease, health, clear mind, pure heart. That's it. That's la khawfun alayhim wa lahum.
You know, going back to the example that I had of some family history, so I had an uncle that visited from Afghanistan some years ago, and he was just observing the lifestyle in the West. So I live here in America, in California. And he said, you know, it's very strange. He said, you people here in America, observing the lifestyle, he said, you have a fridge that is full of food. You have bank account with extra surplus of money and income. And still at the same time, people in the West are typically stressed and afraid. They don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And you look at, for example, people in a more primitive society, and they had breakfast, but they don't know where their dinner will be coming from. They have nothing saved for the tomorrow, and yet they're at peace. So you mentioned about this balance, Sheikh Fadlullah, about learning to align the heart and soul to balance, and also to this dimension of security and safety. What is it that is pushing people in the modern world so far out of balance and away from peace? And how can human beings, especially in the Western world, bring themselves back into that state of contentment and balance?
Too much of nafs, individual. I am so-called I because of my nafs. Nafs is treacherous. Amaratun bisu. Nothing is enough. Nothing can never be content because it's a shadow of the ruh. So how can a moving shadow have stability or any measure of reality? So my nafs, my lower ego, self-ego, and so on, this is what has become dominant. And that's why until maybe 2-3 centuries ago, people who were selfless, were giving, and most of the leaders had those qualities. They were preferring others' comfort and ease to theirs, but it ended up being the reverse, because that became, if you like, the most important, respectable situation. As much as you can, it doesn't matter where you stash it, how you stash it. So we are not yet over that top. It hasn't reached its zenith. Our selfishness, our stupidity. Incidentally, also a comment on the simple people's life. I'd had many opportunities in which I lived with some of these people. And also, if you go deep in it, you find also they are equally, because of the nafs, nafs is everywhere. They also yearn for more money, more pots in the kitchen, more something. It's never as a casual visitor imagines it. You know, there is a lot of quarrels in these poor homes and villages and so on about minutiae, as a passing by somebody saying, oh, how wonderful the way ladies were cooperating and they had very little. And often it's not quite the same. Stay a bit longer and you'll find the human nafs prevails. It is the ruh. Once you know that truly you are a ruh, and the nafs was the early stages for you to be conscious of the ruh, and later, you accommodate the nafs. You don't kill it. You don't reject it. No, it will be a veneer. It will be just this thin thing, like an animal's there. But you are following the signals of insight and higher sight and the ruh. And you also, every now and then, put it in its place and let it do a few silly, stupid things. It is the nafs. And the nafs now globally is rampant. But as I said, I don't think it is fully 100% as yet. There is still a bit of a consideration. Why did you kill all of them? You could have killed 20, 50. No, he said, no, we don't know. This is for purify the race or Arabism or this ism or that ism. We're not there yet. I think we have to be patient, vigilant, do what we can, and possibly have your own few people around who at least get that pattern. Read the map. That if you're not illumined, joyfully celebrating the quality of your ruh, you will be engulfed by the different shadows of the nafs. That's how it is. Either or.
We see in other disciplines or philosophies, for example, in Buddhism, this discussion of this inherent wanting, this inherent constant perpetual need and desire of the self for more and for attachment. What would you say, Sheikh Fadlu, about the role of what we would call in Islam or in Arabic, zuhud? I don't know what the right translation for this word would be, yeah, but sometimes we say asceticism or discipline. What would correct. You, yeah.
Asceticism, and, I think, is a good word for it. Do with less. But if it doesn't come naturally, then it is a measure, is a certain oppression. A child or a young fellow in a household can pick it up by example, not so much by, you know, being hit on the knuckles. When they see the mother, the aunt, they are taking what they want and they're giving the rest or sharing. So in other words, zuhud becomes part of their life, becomes part of the adab and the courtesy which they grew up with. Otherwise, it becomes a madrasa, a stick on the knuckles type mm-hmm. of thing. You end up naturally being zuhud without knowing what zuhud is. I don't want it. I don't want too many of this paraphernalia. You know, I found the less I have stuff, the easier is for me to be alive and in the moment. Otherwise, you end up like many of some of the things that I really like to keep and so on, I somehow have lost them because I don't know where I've hidden it. So you can't find it anymore. So zuhud is taking what you need, keeping what you want, and important for your comfort and ease, so that you are more and more with your ruh, and then trust. Trust in the heart. And that is where the fun is. This business of awliya, or great beings, or awakened being, or enlightened being, there are people who know that if they are truly were in need of it, according to the higher judgment, it will come. But you have to live it. You can't just preach it and so on. It doesn't work. Become pseudo-Sufi, pseudo-this. It's a lot of that going on. It's pretty, pretty, you know, dull. It has to be real. It has to be your nature. You have to bring forth that hidden, subtle part in you, which is transmitted from your ruh. Otherwise, the nafs, endless. The nafs, endless. The ruh has no beginning nor end. It's something else. But the greed and the fear and the desire of the nafs is endless. As for the ruh, it is samadiyya. It's self-contained. It has no anxiety. It has no worry about tomorrow's thing. Insurance upon insurance. So I think, although on the face of it, we're living at a very difficult, stressful, and a time of misery and suffering, I think it's coming to a point where there may be bursts of life. A person can earn far, far, far more than they can, and they take a job that's not necessarily that because they feel their contribution, they're doing that job, is better than anything else. We have moved to a new zone now that people, without calling it as such, they realize there is another measure of wealth, your inner state of wealth, trust. But we have to live it. We have to test it, that you have nothing. You don't know from where it will come. You've done you what you can. You've searched. Now be quiet. You'll be amazed. You'll be, for everyone, it will be like that. They will be amazed. But you are not there to test Allah. You first have to test your shadows, put them in their place, and be honest. You need honesty, which requires a lot of courage. Then you are in the moment. The moment is eternal. The moment is divine. But you have to do it with total honesty and bereftness and humbleness, because there is no you other than the ruh. What relationship do you have with them? What have you done about it? It is all ruh. It is all arwah. The entire business is spiritual. And our crisis is spiritual. And our, if you like, all issues end up from where they've started, which is that. In the meantime, there are also other things which are to do with duality, the good and the bad and the up and the down. You can't deny that. But it is only on the outer level until you find everything is emanating from that unseen, becomes visible in the seen and becomes hard and becomes, that's it. We are in the middle. Wait until the relief comes by the removal of the veils of the nafs and the body and the mind and the fear of it and all of those things. So you are now the ruh only. In this life, we are a ruh that is mediated by a nafs. So the nafs can distract a lot. But so for us to practice until there is only the ruh with a small veneer of the lower self, you deal with that. And then it's ready. If you live longer or shorter, you're alive now. That's why also these words are used, enlightened, awakened, self-realized. These are terms which I don't think will last long because they were a legacy of some, you know, another, if you like, human aspiration for. Are you illumined? Is your sheikh enlightened? What percentage? All what you can say, is he or she truly content, irrespective of the circumstances? Is he or she are just as cheerful when they are told you have 1 hour to live? Because they know life continues. So they find one. Think, I hope it won't be too cumbersome for you to carry my body, whatever. It's another attitude. We have not been living that communal. The more simpler people in villages and towns, as you mentioned and so on, they are used to that. They don't have all the encumbrances of so-called civilization. All of these different clothes and shoes and rooms, and they're free of that. But equally, they are at the other end of impoverishment. You know, you need a bit more of that to be a bit comfortable. So that's the story. We are in the middle, humanity and divinity. We have to take care of humanity up to a point. Now we have become obsessed with it. My holidays, my leave, as though I've given this allotment of time or years, I have to maximize. I'm not going to look at people who are immensely wealthy. They could do anything, anywhere, anytime. They died miserably. Look at them. So we have moved from religiosity to interacting with the different states and realities around us. It's real. Now it's an emergency. You can't, you know, I'm sitting to meditate and so on, and there's a hurricane. It's madness. Put things in perspective. I'm here. I have to take care of this amazing treasure of life. I have to take shelter. You can't. We're all subjected to the same thing, and that is where divine justice is. All of us, each one of us, are given opportunities to just step aside and see that amazing beyond the mind, beyond the personality, presence, and rahmah. Rahmah, rahmah, rahmah. Grace, grace, grace.
MashaAllah. Sidi, you were describing earlier the natural development of adab and certain qualities, for example, zuhud, as a result of one's environment. One is in the right environment, they will naturally begin to develop in a certain way. And in this case, in a way that is conducive with the spirit and spiritual development of the human being versus the opposite, which is increasing indulgence in the self and in the ego and in the material world. What could you say about the importance of environment and how can we as human beings consciously put ourselves in environments that are more conducive to our true happiness and to connection with eternity? What should people look for and what should they try to avoid in terms of environments?
It is a difficult issue because We got used to more and more fog and confusion and uncertainty. If you had asked this question 200 years ago, the answer would have been, find an awakened, enlightened person who's trustworthy and follow him. And that's where they were. There were people in many, many small villages. They were the elders. They were, and they were naturally scrutinized, you know. Unlike now, we don't know who is the fellow, what background, what, but we all have the habit wanting to find a leader who would lead himself or herself out of the self and the shadow of the self. We naturally want that. But time for that has passed. That luxury doesn't exist anymore. Now, I think, through the development of intelligence and the evolution of consciousness, we're at the point where every one of us need to exercise regular replenishment of spiritual energy through salah, through vigil, through silence, through whatever. I mean, the popularity, if you like, of yoga, the popularity of all of these different techniques to switch off, to be, all of them indicate the need for reference to the soul, to the ruh. I think this is what will happen. Instead of looking for who is it, what personality, check the biography, go and look into the souls, because most of these people of awliya, whatever, they've started somewhere, somehow, as a child. And if you look at the biography, it's full of mistakes, full of situations that you and I will find, really, if you were there at that time, you run away. It doesn't make sense. But this is what life is. We learn through difficulties. We learn through mistakes. We learn. Yeah, there were not all these pure soul with the nice little thing anymore. It's not like that. They've come from, if you like, look at the situation in the womb. Look at all what goes on there. Look at the biomes. If people didn't have enough of that, they would be completely deficient. Microbiome. So it isn't what we imagine. It's pure, it's nine. No, it's not necessarily like it's a ruh that will, in a way, bring in that energy of drive towards the higher, towards the eternal light, out of everything, out of anything as definable. Now, more and more I come across younger people who are qualified, can earn a lot of money, a lot. They opt out for something else. And I think that will increase. You can earn far more. That's secure. I can change my job. I can go anywhere. But at the same time, I have to work on myself. I need more time to switch off. I need more time to just wander off or whatever. It's beginning. So the days of personality and biographies has moved into reading, learning, living the patterns of reality. Reality. The pain in my toe may have a real cause. It's affecting me. I can't think clearly. I can't move. And until I find that reality is boundless, eternal, every sound emerges from it. Every movement emerges from it. Everything returns back to it. Allah. So it is no more the way that spirituality or religion was understood maybe 100 years ago. It's the same thing, but different circumstances, different languages, different, and also the leadership will be different. So the issue of piety or zuhud, all of these, remain with a slightly different backdrop, you see. The fellow may, there's a lots of stories on that, even amongst the Sufi literature, that the fellow was sent by his sheikh to go to so-and-so place, so-and-so fellow. He is the greatest of all. So this fellow, whose sheikh, who sent him, very poor, he was a fisherman. So he comes to the town, and they ask about it. They say, oh, he ends up in this palatial place. And he finds these most magnificent carpets. So he was wondering, what sort of a sheikh is that with such carpets? There's so much property, so much. So anyway, as he was watching this magnificent carpet, the sheikh tells one of the people, say, please, this carpet now has to be sold. Please take it now to the bazaar. So in 3-4 hours after that, somebody walks in with the same carpet, having bought it, said, no, this is worthy for my sheikh. He brought it back into the same place. It's not what we think. It's not about what you think is the, it is the attachment to the heart. It is the importance you have given it. We have given so much importance to everything except the perfect light, the divine light, which is transmitted by the Ruh. That's it. This has to come back. And it's not by retracing. It's much of what we have done is not reversible. It remains, there is a nostalgic thing. The good old time. Good. No, there were a lot of bad things. So maybe the bad even sometimes is more. It can't say good old time. It's fantasy. You know, we're theater. That's it.
And what you said earlier, Sheikh Fadlallah, it really takes courage to not look backwards, but to move forward into the new, into a new possibility, into a new opening. You've described the capacity of the human being to exist in between two polar opposites, in this space between contrast, between the seen and the unseen, between the eternal and the temporal. Would you say that this is also a reference to this idea in the Quran as the meeting of the two seas? In fact, I've seen this in some of your symbolism, where the land meets the sea, this in-between space or state. This is where, for example, Moses is directed to find Khidr, alayhi salam, at the meeting of the two seas. What can you perhaps shed some light on this idea of the Majm al-Bahrain, the merging of these two oceans?
We live as human beings. Our conditioned consciousness is such that we are constantly seeing the two opposites complement each other. Life and death, good and bad, awake and sleep. And so I am myself, the so-called human being. I am the barzakh. Mm-hmm. Between breathing in, breathing out. Between born and death. Every one of us is a barzakh. Between the infinite unknown before I was born, and the finite here, and again the infinite unknown after I die. This is how it is. So we are here practicing the situation to know that the Nur of Allah, as my Ruh, is in charge. And I have to accept that, honor it, and be obsessed with it, voluntarily, with will, with goodness. That's it. And then I'm khalas, there is nothing in my hand. Do what you can. I died. Not the I that dies, it is the body and the mind. And so we are here to do work. In this world, we have duty, we have responsibility, we have to participate, and we'll make mistakes and retract and put it right and be humble and apologize. Say, I made a mistake. Please excuse me. As long as I haven't afflicted you. Be honest, and you find your ruh is in charge. And you find that your ruh never lies. It is I who have lied. Because I wanted to paint some certain thing about my reputation. The Ruh never lies. The light of never, ever. It is only the shadows. And the shadow of the nafs is important because it is the shadow that led me to the light, you see. Without that shadow, without the darkness, without the murkiness, I wouldn't have realized it truly. I am defined in the best situation by my Ruh. It is the source of my life. The more I refer to it, the less I have regrets, worries, guilt, all of the other negative. That's all. I have to do it. For that, you need few people with you. You don't necessarily need a grand master, the grand vizier. You don't need it. Intelligence had risen to a point where people will have difficulty in obeying or following a teacher. Difficult. They say, why not me? What has he got that I haven't got? Because the truth, it isn't what he has got that you haven't. He has not got. He's got rid of his illusions, his greed, his anxieties. That is what the wali is. He has none of these. None of this stuff that other people have. Concern, worry, and all of the other things. Love for power, love for money. He hasn't got it. So he has less than the fellow who is trying to be like him. No, lose all and you may become a bit lamana. But I think we've come to a point through intelligence that you don't need to have all of these fancy things. And, you know, I was quite amused earlier on in reading about all of these great, difficult exercises that the seekers were put on, hanging upside down in a well for I don't know how many days, and this and that.
Sidi, I don't want to keep you too long. I know it's getting late in the evening for you in South Africa. What advice would you give to people listening, and what would be your general advice to the audience? What comes to your heart to share?
Be honest. Serve whoever you can, which touches you, who have some need or another. Get out of yourself by helping other selves. This is natural. It's our basic human nature. Kindness. Just be kind. Be considerate. And also don't interfere too much. What does concern you? Do it. Serve, help, listen, remind everyone and yourself first and foremost that you are a ruh, and the ruh doesn't die. The ruh is alive and has the capacity of being boundless. It is the issue of space and time that we suffer from. So, and the ruh is perpetual, and space does not constrict it. So learn until such time you really know you are a ruh, and you put up then with the nafs. At the moment it is nafs, then this, I did this, and I can do this, and I can do that, and I will show them. Who has authorized you to do this and that? So be aware and be genuine when you recite Bismillah. Meaning, do I have the permission? I am calling on that door of Allah. Do I have permission to do this or not? Not until you find that there is more not to do than to do, then you are all right. Don't do it. It's not my business. Not the right time. Not the right place, not the right situation. Wait. The reason we want things instantly, because the ruh is eternally present. So the so-called I, the shadow, wants it now. Be patient, be present. The litmus test for what you ask is if you are truly, genuinely, as cheerful to die, to leave your body and mind, as you are the best of cheerfulness. Thank you very much. Time has come. My ruh continues liberated from the septic tank confinement. That's it. You have to laugh at it. You have to truly laugh at the situation we're in. I am, you know, we are spiritual people. You know, we are this way. What are we talking about? Everything is spiritual in its own essence. But you and I have to realize it, follow it, and take reference from it. It is very helpful if you find people who are a bit ahead of you in any of these different dimensions, and follow them and be with them and change them, go. Until such time you find you were practicing not being concerned by distraction from the transmission of your own goal. That's it. Company is important. That's going to be very difficult in our present day. You need to be in the company of people who are committed to doing their duty on earth before the liberation from the body and the mind upon death. I think that's a big issue.
Amen. May Allah Almighty grant us to be in that company that He is pleased with. I want to thank you, Sheikh Fadla. I don't want to keep you too long. Like I said, I know it's getting quite late there. Jazakallahu khairan. It's been a pleasure to meet in person and to have a moment with you.
Thank
you, Sidi. Perhaps if I can ask you, perhaps just to maybe to make a dua, a supplication, to conclude our session and our interview today.
I pray as I pray for myself to be more and more and more and more frequent in the moment. Mm-hmm. The moment is connected with timelessness, and the ruh is timeless, is eternal. It's nature not caught in time or space. But I, as a human, am caught. But by virtue of that great grace, I'm yearning for that. So I pray for everyone the same way. Have that yearning and have that obsession with that which is eternal, ever-present, encompasses it all, which is divine. And I thank you very much. I enjoyed hearing you. I enjoyed being with you. I wish you the best of the best of the best. Really, good luck.
Amen.
To you.
Amin. Allah. Jazakallah khairan. Thank you as well.
Thank you.
Salam, Baba. Fi amanallah. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Shukran, Shaykh Fadlallah.
Salam. Bismillah.
I pray that you enjoyed and benefited from this discussion and episode of Soul of Islam Radio. To help us continue to bring you these meaningful conversations regarding spiritual development, faith, and religion, please do us a favor and give us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to this broadcast. And if you can think of at least one person who may benefit from this content, please share Soul of Islam Radio with them. To learn more about Shaykh Fadlallah, please visit his website at sheikhfadlallahhairi.com. We'll include a link in the show notes beneath this episode. To further connect with me and to learn how you can deepen your personal spiritual path and journey, please visit me at borderpoint.com. And join our community through one of the many resources available there for your learning, growth, development, and awakening. With the will and grace of God, I look forward to connecting with you soon. To your divine and eternal success.